Channel 2, right, over. I don't know what it is. This is Bob Haviland, the Farrier, this Saturday, 28th of October, 72. This is the second copy of it with Rick. This is Rick's interview, in fact. Channel 2, right, over on Ms. Guthrie's Reel, this Saturday around noon, the 28th of October, 72.
Come on in, sit down there a minute, and I'll find a checkbook and give you. You need a cup of coffee anyway.
I'm catching breath. I need to catch my breath. That coffee is as poor as any I ever saw. I think it perked a little bit before the juice went off. How is your horses? Bad shape?
Whitemare's front feeder. Not rough. Those aren't bad.
Need to throw a buggy. Okay. Need to throw a
wound up that cord there.
Yeah.
Old light.
She needs to swap them off and get some new ones.
Oh, I don't know about that until you get something that's pretty decent. I've got two out. Well, one of them belongs to my boy. That's the reason it's not for sale. He wouldn't sell it for anything. Another little filly belongs to me. Came out of that mare. He keeps saying it's my. Mayor says, you're going to have to pay him for it. I said, you didn't pay me any stud fee. My stud brother, did you? He says, well, how much you want? I said, $500. You got it? He said, no. I said, all right, I'll just take the filly. I was going to get it one way or another because my stud was killed right after the mare was bred, see?
Uh-huh.
And he was as good a horse as I ever rode. He was one of the two best buys I've ever made in my life. And I had to sell the other one. I sure didn't want to, but I had to let the other one go. And I'm hoping to buy him back. I know where he is. I'm hoping to get him back one of these days.
Well, what happened to him?
Well, my stud, people left the gates open and got out in the road.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord.
I give $190 to that horse down a mile. He's just about two and a half years old. And I don't know how much I turned down for him just before he was killed. I was told me, said, I'll give you $1,000 for him. I said, man, don't even look at me. I don't even want to look at you for that money. I said, just turn your back. Don't look at my horse. That's all you want.
You mean he was that kind of horse?
I said, he said, what do you take? So I figured I knew I'd have to go a good bit higher. I said, what do you take? I said, when you get to $3,500, we'll talk about it. And he said, well, I said, I can't hardly get that, go that high on him. He said, I might talk about $25. I said, just don't bother me. He wasn't that kind of horse, really. I mean, but if I didn't need any money, you just couldn't have bought him. I don't care what you came up with. But if I was going to do it, I wanted $3,500 to pay myself out of hocker. That's the only way I'll let him go.
Yeah.
I don't need it. Other than that, if I can't pay out completely, I said, I'm not going to take part of it. Well, that's been a few years ago, and I didn't really need it anyway. I was still paying on a car or a truck or something, and, you know.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I probably would have to. I bought a little blue horse, both of them registered quarter horses. I bought a little blue horse up at Tallahassee about a little over 2 years ago. I had him, I guess, the best part of a year, a little more. I don't know, I sold him the same year I bought him, or was it next year? I don't even remember now. I can't keep track of time.
You know, don't look at me.
I tell you what, I just know what comes up tomorrow. I don't remember what I did yesterday. I don't even try to. That's over with. The heck is it?
Some people seem just to keep it all in mind just perfect clear, don't they?
Well, my granddad, before he died, now he could remember things that he was 95. He could remember things even when he was 6, 7 years old.
Yeah. And then yesterday too.
Yeah. Yeah, he could. Now he couldn't keep me and my brother straight, and he couldn't keep all my children straight. But then, of course, they came along, you know, a lot later, and he didn't see that much of them.
But you know, that's partly because they get to the point they don't give a damn. Don't you reckon?
I reckon so. He had so many grandchildren and great grandchildren. It was hard for him to keep up with them. Now, I tell you what, we carried, I guess, 500 I don't know, at the peak we might have had 700-800 brood cows out there on the ranch.
I don't mind.
I guarantee you that man could tell you which cow calved, when she calved, what kind of calf it was, or the bull or heifer.
Yeah.
I mean, every year he says, well, that cow now has calved every year for the past 4 years, and two or three of them been heifer or something like that. Just right down the line.
Yeah, they can do that, some of them.
And I used to be pretty good at it, but then I got away and didn't get back too often. And he said, well, now that calf, there comes that cow, and she's out of that cow.
Well, now, is that down south?
That was down in Ron Stewart.
Yeah.
Fort Pierce.
Yeah.
I hate to see him move off that place.
Yeah, don't you? Yes, sir.
They sold it, but I mean, that was all right selling it, but they could have stayed there, and they'd been better off if they had.
Yeah.
They'd been a lot better off. Of course, I mean, he was 95, I guess, when he died about a year or so ago.
Well, the thing about it now is, once you sell your place, you'll never get another one.
Yeah, I don't look like I'm going to get the first one.
Well, you sell it for $500 an acre, and the man that buys it wants $750, and then man that buys it wants $1,000, you see.
The thing is, when you buy or when you sell land like that, you've got to figure on moving to a place that's farther out or something. Now, well, there's still plenty of land around at reasonable prices, but it's not right in the area where you are. I mean, it just keeps going up.
Or you've got to go away some ways out for it?
Well, like over to Levy County. I know the land over there that was 125 an acre a year ago now. I don't know what it is today, or if it's still, it may have been sold. And I know there's plenty of $300 an acre land, stuff like that.
But you're not what you want it.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, it's the price you have to pay. You got to get out. It's like we bought that place of ours down there. We bought five sections. Paid, this is about 49, 48, 49, somewhere along there. Paid anywhere from $7.25 to $10.75 an acre for it, see?
Yeah.
Well, about 10 years later, around 59, Mackerel came through, and they give $300 an acre right across the board, and that's Port St. Lucie now.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean, the ranch still, there's nothing out there yet. That's been, 13 years ago, and ain't nothing out there yet, and won't be for a while. It's west of the turnpike.
Yeah.
That first thing happened, the turnpike went through the place. No, I know a lot of, in fact, I know some pretty good price land around this area, but I can't touch it. You know, I mean, all I can do is pay $1 down, $1 a month, I'd be doing good, but there's still some fair price land around here comparing to the rest of it, you know, what the rest of it.
You mean pretty fair land? Well, now that, a lot of that over in Williston is that Turkey Oak.
Yeah.
Land.
But you see what they do with any of it. They buy it and they break it up into 5 acre chunks, and they get $1,000 an acre for any of it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care what it is. If it's underwater, they're going to get $1,000 an acre for 5 acre chunk.
Yeah. They don't care whether it's turkey or underwater or what.
All they're going to do is go out there and put. I tell you what, man, I wouldn't have believed this was possible because I was out there. Well, it's been 6 months or so ago. A friend of mine bought, I think, 40 acres out between Williston and Bronson. And mister, you talk about poor land. It looked poor land to me. I mean, high old pine and that turkey oak and blackjack and just scrub, nothing. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
And I believe Jack said he paid $600 and something dollars an acre for it.
Gee
whiz. You know, he told me he's already turned down $1,500 an acre, and this ain't been a year. $1,500 an acre for 40 acres? Wow, man. Phew, ain't no way.
Yeah.
I mean, this is way back in the woods, too. It's not on a hard road.
Yeah.
Well, there's some right down here in Marion County on Millwood Road, or just off Millwood Road, lays a quarter off. There's 80 acres. Man, I can buy that right now, I believe. The fella was wanting 6.5 on terms or 6.25 cash. Well, everything around there is selling for $1,000, $1,200, In fact, broke up into 5-acre tracts within a half mile of that piece of land. Gabriel Powers is selling 5-acre tracts at $1,800 an acre.
Yeah.
Now that's a good buying land.
Yeah.
I mean, comparatively speaking.
But see, I only paid $125 for this.
Yeah.
Let me see, Rick, you was telling me about this, what was that?
You were saying last time.
He made money out of vegetables.
Yeah.
Vegetables.
That's where you can make it.
Vegetables.
Well, now, not any, see, this happened.
The season, I mean, following the season.
Oh, fruit tramping, yeah. Yeah, you, there's
oh,
money
you did
in
that?
Well, not exactly. Now, I was with the one company. I was on straight salary. Now, I guarantee you, a lot of those people, some weeks, they made a lot more money than I did. But it didn't make any difference. See, whether I worked 2 hours or whether I worked 100 or so hours, I'd do the same wages. 52 weeks a year, I had a good job with them. But I know the first year I went regular with them, we had 4 weeks. It made it, it just a tremendous crop. It made it, everything came in at once. Everything was good. And everybody lost money. I mean, you know, when everything comes like that, you got no price.
Got no price.
And it broke market for 4 weeks. And that was all the season lasted, usually the last 2 months or so, at least straggle in and straggle out. But we run for 4 weeks in shutdown. That was it. It wouldn't, didn't pay to haul them in.
Yeah.
And we started 9, 10 o'clock in the morning, run to 3:30 the next morning, just every day.
Mm.
And there's people that didn't even bother to go home. They lay right down there on the floor and sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
But now they were making it by the hour, see. And they made a lot more money than I did. But
by
then,
the hour?
Sure.
I didn't know any of them was paid by the hour.
Yeah. Well, this was in a packing house.
Oh.
But they don't pay them by the piece of the packing house?
Well, now it depends on the kind of packing house. Now, bulk packing house, no. But now if you're doing vine racks, where you're wrapping each tomato individual,
uh-huh,
then it's piecework. Then you get, say, 10 cents a box.
So they make money on that.
And they do make some money if they hit a good crop and they're good. Now, you got to be good at it.
Well, that wouldn't be that much to it, would it? Just wrap a piece of paper around the tomato?
You ought to see those people. You can't hardly see the hands move.
Oh.
They just like this.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, they're picking up paper, picking up tomato, and getting a wrap on it,
yeah,
and getting in the box just,
yeah,
so fast. You just can't hardly see the hands move. They're just flying.
Yeah.
They don't do that just a short burst.
They'll do it most of the day. Now,
all day?
Well, I won't say all day because they have to wait for the tomatoes to catch up. I mean, they're just not running out that fast.
You mean
they may go for 5 or 10 minutes and they might sit down for a few minutes. And then again, they might sit down for an hour. But they're on piecework, so it doesn't make any difference. I mean, they'd rather have tomatoes there. When tomatoes are ripe, and they know what they're doing. I have seen them make $125 in a day.
Well,
and consistently making $70, $80 a day. Consistently.
That's all new to me. I never knew anything like that went on. Well, now, they weren't following the season.
Mm-hmm.
They was native, residents.
No, the good ones follow the season. They've got to keep it up all the time.
Oh.
If they were just sitting there and waiting each season, why? They wouldn't have enough practice to keep that fast.
Oh.
They've got they're really professionals in their business.
Now, that's been as long as you can remember.
Well, now, I haven't been down there in about 5 or 6 years. But they've been doing it. Of course, a lot of things have been changing over the years recently. Now, picking out in the field, you don't very often go piecework.
Yeah.
Because if you did, you just pick one time and that'd be the end of it.
Yeah.
They'd never leave anything left to picking again.
Yeah.
Now, when you pick about an hour, say you're going to figure you got three pickings coming. Or you start picking and usually try to get three pickings out of it. Well, the first two pickings, you better pick by the hour. And you ain't getting much work out of them that way. That third picking, you pick by the bushel, piecework. Man, they just go in there and strip them down. We could tell in that packing house just as sure as a farm There's about 10 or 12 farms, see, that's coming in all the time.
Yeah.
And you could tell just sure which farm was picking piecework and which one was on the hour.
Yeah.
Because when you started running something through that was on piecework, man, you started cleaning vines out of that machine like you're going crazy. And throwing culls out, they just pick anything. You're throwing culls out, they'd pick more culls than they would good ones.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And get 25 cents a bucket to do it, or you couldn't get them. They wouldn't work for less than 25 cents a bucket.
So they didn't care whether they were good or not.
They didn't care.
So they filled it up.
So they filled it up. The lugger got a dime.
Now that was
the guy that carried them from Picker to the wharf.
That was all those different farms?
But I don't think many of them use piecework too much anymore. Very seldom. Unless you've got a good market, and you know you're through picking, this is the last time you're going to pick, and you can use just about anything they put in there. The market's that good.
Yeah.
Then you can go in and run piecework.
I just never heard of it.
Well, now, how far up did you go?
Well, I very seldom had to go out of Fort Pierce.
Oh.
See, we started there, let's say, about the middle of October. And we'd run until about the first year, up in December sometime. Now, see, this is why I'm saying I did better over the year, because I drew my $100 a week. And some weeks I might not put in 10 hours altogether.
Mm.
I might go in there for 3 or 4 hours in an evening, and then they'd knock off for a few days, come back and run a few hours. And then during the summer, we'd go in and play cards most of the day, do a little machinery work. Gave us a month's vacation every summer. And we'd do a little machinery work maybe for an hour or so in the morning and go play cards, and then about the same in the afternoon. Sometimes we didn't even bother to do that. There really wasn't much to do during the summer. Now, just say
them. Just holding it together.
That's all. And now, during the winter, I used to have to go down to Port of Palm Beach. And Steve Doherty boats, we farmed Bahamas. And we'd bring cucumbers over all winter from Bahamas. So I used to have to go down there and unload boats.
Oh.
Check them, unload. And then start back again, we start back sometime about the latter part of March. We start back in, then we'd run until, about the middle of June, somewhere like that. And then we took them, usually the 1st of July we take off the month of July.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of loafed around August, part of September, and then we'd go to work getting the machinery ready again.
Yeah.
And into sometimes there'd be, almost every year they'd have a new project they wanted to put in, new conveyor system or this or that or the other. So we'd work at that in the winter sometimes. And some of the fellas would go down to the Pompano house now, Pompano Beach, or Pompano, and run the vine ripe crop down there in the wintertime. And then some of them would go over to the Bahamas and work that into the deal. I was over there once. And then in the latter part of, or in June, some of them would go up to North Carolina, up to Beaufort, South Carolina, and work a deal up there. But, it pretty well got to the point after a while that it just took all of us that were regulars down here. But now the actual fruit tramps, the ones that weren't all straight sour, they'd start, let's see, all right, they'd come down here. This is, all right, they'll be down around Fort Pierce right now. From Fort Pierce, they'd go to Miami, down below Miami, Dade County, down Prime. And all that, and work that crop down there. Or a lot of them will stop in Pompano and work the vine ripe deal. And there'd be a bunch of them be over around Belgrade working beans and what have you. And then some of them will go to Ruskin on the west coast and they'll work that deal. And then they'll catch Fort Pierce market area. And then again in March. And then they go to the Carolinas, and they keep on going on up in New York State and all that, and then turn around and come back and start the next year again.
Well,
Well, I'm saying the only ones I ever had any, was in touch with was up here at Latchway and up in there, and they were pretty crummy bunch.
Well,
they'd work during the day and drink all night, and they didn't have much work in them. They were wore out all the time.
Well, this was actually, this is the majority of them, I would say. They wouldn't be good for packing vine ripes, piecework. They wouldn't even bother to do that.
Yeah.
They're the kind of people they, I mean, it's there to be done. And some of these people, even these ones that you've seen, they might get on a job somewhere up the country and make some good money for a week or two.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Some of these deals, man, they big for a week and that's it. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
And then they go on. And they might make some real good money for a week or two, get into a good crop and get into a good spot and make a lot of money for a few days, but they won't have it 3 days later.
Yeah.
They're not going to have it.
They blow it that fast.
Well, now that's
they go, they gamble it away or stay drunk for 2 weeks or something like that. This is the kind of people, I mean, it's not a question of the money isn't there. Like I say, there was one family, they very seldom stopped at our house because we just paid hourly wages. Now, they worked our vine ripe deal down there. That's where their talents could be used.
Yeah.
You know, they could make that piece work. And they were specialists, really. They were professional fruit tramps.
Well, let me tell you. Now, Miss Daisy down here, Daisy, right, she's old now. And, but now, her old man followed the season a lot of times, there for a long time. And he never made a thing, never had anything out to show for it. And, but now the young people in their family down at Plant City and along in there, they follow the season in a house trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And they get a nice sleep.
Well, here's the thing about it, too. You got a person just going going fruit tramping for the first year, he's probably not going to do much till he gets to where he knows where to go and gets in with the people there.
Yeah.
I mean, your foreman, heck, I knew just about who was going to be showing up and when they were going to show up around my house every year.
Oh.
Well, same ones?
Same ones would be there every year.
Yeah.
And I pretty well knew when they'd be there, and they don't want to come in when you just start because they're not making any money.
Yeah.
They'll try to hold off until it gets going good. But they were good people. They were good workers. And you knew you had to hold the plate. I put them on to work when I didn't need them.
Because
I knew some of these others were going to drop out or get drunk or something.
Yeah.
But see, it's not, things have changed so much in the past few years that you used to be able to depend on these people coming in.
Yeah.
And sure, a lot of them were just winos. They'd come in, they'd work a week or two, and they were good. And they'd follow the crop so they could drop into any packing house and they knew what to do.
Yeah.
Just anywhere in the country. They knew just almost exactly what to do.
Yeah.
But they'd make a payday and you might not see them for 3 or 4 days or a week. But there's always another one just like him standing back there waiting for his job.
Yeah.
And he'd come in, he'd go to work for a week or two and that'd be the end of him.
Yeah.
And then the first one might come back. But nowadays there's not many of those people left.
Oh, really?
I mean, the ones that are left have got smart.
Yeah.
And they go on these specialty crops and they make some money.
Yeah.
And the others really, this undependable and all that. And they're dying off. There's not many people going into that thing, into that line of work anymore.
Yeah.
And the farmer depends on them.
Yeah.
Well, has to have them.
He is darn well dependent on them. This union business down here, they talk about that. Why, heck. They might as well have been unionized a number of years ago because you try to get them to go out and pick tomatoes for less than a quarter of a bucket and they just walk off from you. They didn't want to work. They could draw that welfare. Man, they didn't talk about going out there and working. Shoot. Uh-uh. No, I'll tell you, when it gets, that's one of the problems with the country today. When it gets to the point that they come so close to making the same from welfare and this and that is a do from working, a person will not work.
No.
We had one, my wife come down there and worked me a while so she could see me once in a while. I was gone, you know, during the season, you just hardly ever get home. An old boy run the dump down there, old Doc, there down there. He'd go home every other day,
yeah.
And that's all. The rest of the time, he'd stay right there at the packing house. He'd go home and take a shower every other day and eat a hot meal once every 2 days, and that'd be it.
Well, yeah, you see a lot of people in that sort of business. You work with a lot, and then they come in and go in all the time. Let me tell you, I never was in with any of these packing house people. But I run into this fella over here at Citra. He's not very old. I think his name is Willoughby. And he runs these little packing houses down there at Red Oaks and at Reddick, one place or another now. And he's a great talker. That is, you go up, and if he's not too busy, you can talk. And I said to him, I mentioned a number of people, and he knew them all. I said to him, it looked to me like people I run into around here, they know them around McIntosh or around Reddick or something like that, but they all got their boundaries. But you know them all, I'm not lying. Why, he says, young man, I don't either. And he told me all these packing houses. And you see, the women would come out of the countryside there, and he'd know all of them, and the people be hauling in vegetables, and he knew all of them, and these fellas that grew them, why.
Yeah, I guarantee he knows Mo Shear. He mows all up the country. He's a tomato buyer, but he's got a few little deals of his own, runs houses of his own. I think he runs one up in Lotchway, or did run a house up in Lotchway. See, that house there would be open maybe 3 or 4 weeks at the most, and that'd be it.
Yeah.
Out of a whole year.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That just sets there.
But see, I mean, a person, unless they were to see that deal down there, can't hardly comprehend. We could load out a solid train load of tomatoes by ourselves in a night. And you can imagine dumping 2,200 field crates of tomatoes an hour. 2,200 an hour. We have got in as high as 135 loads of an average of, let's say, 300 boxes a load. 300 boxes a load. And 135 loads in one day. Now, we couldn't run them all. In fact, that 4 weeks I was telling you about, we had trucks that didn't get unloaded for 2 and 3 days. Tomatoes, the right time we got them unloaded after they got them picked. We almost had so much to them out. They'd sit out there trying to get to the dock to get unloaded. We'd have a house full, and the house would hold about 100 loads. And at any one time, there might be over 100 loads of tomatoes. That's 300 boxes to the load, field crates to the load. Now you imagine how many tomatoes that is.
Yeah.
Oh,
the house would be full, and I guess there's 50 or 60 loads in the house on the unloading dock. The yard would be full out in front of it, and there's a double line of trucks slamming back the US-1 out from our house there at one time. I've seen that.
Yeah.
And that's...
So somebody's gonna get some money out of it, and somebody's going to come out the short end.
I hate to see a deal like that, but nobody makes any money then.
Yeah.
Just too many tomatoes.
Too many tomatoes.
Too many.
Overload. That's why I say a little outfit cannot make it today.
Yeah.
A little grower. Now, being perishables, he might. When he hits, he'll hit.
Yeah.
Now, if I got a little 20-acre patch out here somewhere, and I've seen it, boy, tomatoes just get like gold.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But then he's got to split with this one, that, and the other. And 9 times out of 10, the big outfits are going to be the ones to make it.
Oh, yes.
Because he's going to take his losses. He may take 5 losses in a row.
Yeah.
Or the big corporation, they got farm here, farm here, farm here, farm all over.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. In this particular time, everything is wiped out. Well, if this little man happened to be in there, he's through.
Yeah.
Well, but the corporation got these over here.
Yeah.
You got to lose some of it to run the price up. And they're going to make it overall. They're going to make it overall. Especially like we were now. My wife's uncle, her people farmed down in Dade County. And they were a big outfit. But they farmed all in one place.
Oh.
One crop in one place. Had five bad years and wiped them out. The place I was with farmed, like I say, Carolinas, Mexico, Florida, Georgia, Bahamas.
Yeah.
Did farm Cuba at one time.
Cuba?
And then they had tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, eggplants. I don't know what all they had. Okra.
Yeah.
So they could swap around.
So they came out.
Now. Well, now, around in places like this, at least since the war, World War II, the way it comes to me, it gets to me, is that the man who runs the packing shed down there, he gonna get so much out of it. He ain't gonna leave much for the grower.
Well, this is where he's got them over a barrel, right?
Yeah.
So
he just puts them out of business.
Now, see, our packing house down there charged so much per box.
Yeah.
And so much commission on selling. But it was all, I mean, the grower, the packing house, selling, everybody was still working for the same company. Basic parent company, and no part of it went broke because they switched money from one to the other. If this man had a bad year, tomatoes from this one would be run under his name sometime.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, it wasn't a matter of cheating anybody, because this, see, the grower didn't just work on a straight salary. I mean, he got commission on what he picked. And they wasn't going to let any man, any farmer that worked for them.
Yeah.
And it was semi-independent, in other words.
Well,
and there were various ways they could grow, they could farm for them. They could farm on a percentage basis. That the company put up so much and the farmer put up so much. And they split.
Well, I never run into that. Why didn't that get up to here?
This wasn't an area that they would care about worrying with. It
well,
wasn't big enough.
At one time it was. At one time, it was big.
Well, it's too
well,
short.
Well, you didn't
it's
have
too
any.
Short a crop. Too
guess,
short, really.
Yeah.
Now, Carolinas is a short crop, too, and boy, it could get clobbered. That place, every year that I can remember, it'd rain out. How in the heck they ever made any money there, I don't know. But they came in at a time of the year when, if they picked any, they usually got a heck of a good price for them.
Oh, yeah.
A real good price. Yeah. It was just one of those little spot deals.
Yeah.
2 or 3 weeks, that's all of it.
Yeah.
And, man, they could make money on a week or two.
Yeah.
Just tomatoes would be way up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess they made money or they wouldn't have kept it up.
Yeah.
They farmed up at Madison a couple of years, but it didn't pay off.
Well, now, but you got out of the vegetable business.
I did. Well, I just worked for that. But my uncle got out of it. But he retired out of it.
And when he retired, you quit?
No, I'd left before then.
Oh, had you?
I was just working. I mean, there was no family really to it. I was just working for the company.
Sure. But I mean, you got out of that. You had enough of it.
Put it that way, I was never home at night.
Oh, yeah.
It was a good deal in some ways. And, well, it was just another job. I mean, it didn't. I in a way, I liked it, and if I'd been single, I'd have probably followed.
Oh, yeah.
But really, couple of the foremen, of course, we got a month's paid vacation. But we had about 3 months we weren't doing anything.
Yeah.
So they'd take the vacation and then take two more months off without pay, and they'd go up the country and they'd handle contracts with other packing houses for other companies.
Oh.
And some of them would just take it all without paying vacation for 3 months. So, I mean, it was a good job, but I like what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to stay in the same thing, bro.
No, I've always rather work with livestock myself. Maybe my uncle mad when I said that.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize. I mean, he took it different than what I meant it. We were having a little discussion there, and I'll argue with anybody.
Yeah.
I figure I learned something that way.
Yeah.
It causes a person to bring out everything he knows to try to convince me.
Yeah. And you get it out there anywhere you can see it.
And we were having a little discussion at supper table. I didn't know about it 2 years later. That I see we had pro and con on cattle and vegetables. Well, he made his investment. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I like to work the cattle. I like to work the farm too. I'd rather be out the farm other than in the packing house. But I made him mad. That's all it was to him. I didn't realize it.
Well, it's entirely different, isn't it?
I just like to be working.
You don't have any in the packing house. You gotta keep moving during the season, and you don't have any season like that in the cattle.
No. I've always liked working with cattle anyway. I'd rather work with cows than horses.
Oh, has you?
I like to play. Horses are a hobby. I like to play with. Of course, cattle are too. Really, and I enjoy working with them.
But you really like the cattle.
Oh,
horses.
I study them a lot more.
Yeah. You know, horses to me, I look at a horse and he's I look at him and I can tell right off he's smarter than I am.
Well, I tell you what, I've seen some Brummer cows that were pretty smart too.
Oh, you have?
Most people say, I'm crazy wild, Brummer. They got more sense and more personality than most people.
A Brahma?
You mean them old wild Brahmas?
No, not the wild ones. There's good ones around. I've had them just like puppy dogs.
And they got sense too?
Well, yeah, they do in their own way. No, even those wild ones, they got sense in their own mind. It's got a lot of sense. You get out and try to work one, see how much see if he don't get away from you. But really, they're very, very intelligent animals.
Well, you can't. It's hard to work them.
It's different. I'll put it that way. I don't think it's all that hard. You've got to have good fencing and all to keep them in.
Yeah.
And I don't mean necessarily because of wild. I had a bull that was just as tame as any dog you want to find, and just as well trained as any dog you want to see. That a kid could get out there and he'd be laying out there and passing young, get out there and play all over on top of him and all. And my two oldest ones remember him, they were old enough to. They'd go out there and pass and he'd be laying out, they'd get up on him, play on him, pull on his ears and all. And directly he'd get up with them on top of him, he'd bring them on back to the barn and they'd slide off. And he'd feel better about my bull.
And on the range.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of any bull like that.
I don't either. I doubt if he's alive anymore. But I'll tell you what, I'd have killed a man that got him if I ever caught him. And I'd sit there and laugh at him dying too. Boy, I'll tell you that. Man, that tore me up. Lose that bull. I'd spent 2 years of my life just practically living with it. 1 year up here at the show at the Southeastern Livestock Pavilion, that's where I slept, right on top of him. He'd lay down and go to sleep, and I'd lay up in the crook of his leg, and I'd sleep there. And that's the only bed I had.
Well, you mean he was that good an animal?
I got him when he was about 6 months old, right off his mama out in the pasture.
Yeah.
But they're not all like that. They don't take the training that way. I don't care how much time to put with them. Some of them don't have that temperament.
Yeah.
But he was a good animal.
Well, my impression of them Brummers is you got to have a pretty good runway and your corral, or else they'll bust it.
Well, now, just like I'm saying about this bull, if he is over on in that pasture and he decided he wanted to come over here, he just walked up there and pushed the fence over and come on.
Yeah.
Now, he did that. He ruined the whole day's work for him.
Yeah.
We separated cows, cut out a bunch of different herds, you know, and then placed them in different places on the ranch and put him back there. He was the best thing we had. We took 30 head of the best cows. Put him with them back on the back side, and then we went jerking that night, and we come in, come up to the gates of the place. There that bull standing there at the gate. He'd come through every fence all the way through. I just went over and caught him and carried him back, but it was too late then. He'd already mixed up everything we had. But I mean, he wasn't going to be put back there where somebody wasn't going to be there. He won't step around the barn, around the house all the time.
Yeah.
Because he knew somebody would give him something to eat. He wasn't going to stay back there in the back when nobody was coming.
And he just wasn't going to do it.
So you just screwed up, miscalculated right at the start.
I should have put him up close. Should have left him in the house pasture. And he'd have stayed there.
I never had an animal like that. But you know, I've always wanted Bremers, but I was afraid to get them. I was afraid... They wouldn't just, like one fellow said, if they don't just jump over the fence, they'll walk through it or else roll under it.
Well, once they get used to a place, they're not bad about trying to get out or anything like that. And if you work them right, you've got to work them right now. You can't just hoot and holler them and try to drive them. They ain't going to go that way.
Oh, no?
They'll bust all over the place.
Well, what do you do?
Well, you kind of talk to them.
Oh, yeah, I understand
you
that.
You mean the voice?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's something you just got to see it. You can, back in the woods, now years ago, we just had a lot of wood packs. You get back in there, you can drive them to a point.
Yeah.
But if you want to really trail them any distance, well, you got to kind of set them down and talk to them and bring them along, you know.
Yeah.
And, Marshall Bailey up here in Lotchway had, he breeds Charley. And they like to use a Brahma to breed up a Charley. When they get to 31, 30 seconds, the Charley is purebred then.
Yeah.
And they like to use, to start with, Brahma blooded cow. They're bigger bone and things like that. It helps develop a better Charley in the end. So he had a bunch that were anywhere from quarter to half Brahma. Now, they didn't have any horse. Now, you could have drove them with some pretty good horses, but they didn't have any. And they went out there, and they got the Jeep, and they got the pickup, and they got this and that, and they got the walking, and they tried to drive them up. And every time they get near the gate, there they go. So I told them, I said, now let me go out there and try to get them. I said, but y'all just stay off the side. Don't go tooting your horn.
Yeah.
And nothing. Just sit there.
Yeah. Well, kind of like you said this morning.
Took me about an hour, and I got them off to one side and got behind them and got the fence, got the next fence there. And just kind of talked to them and walked them up, and as they had stopped, I let them stop.
Yeah.
And just let them stand there and talk to them.
Yeah.
Sing to them, what have you. Directly one to start off, and then they'd all go on and start off, and they'd go a little bit far, and they'd stop. Now, when they stopped, if you tried to push them, that's all, they'd be gone. They'd be all over the place.
Well, now, let me tell you, the best fellow I ever had to handle my cows is this fellow, Marvin Thompson, over here. And I'll tell you how he did it. He was very easy with them. And if they wanted to stop a smell or something, he let them smell. And then they went on. But you see, if he starts that hot rod thing, that's when he starts spanking on them or twisting the tails, it makes them nervous and the rest too.
Well, there's a time and a place for all of it. It's like ours. We could drive them good up to the crevice. Now, we had a long crevice run about a quarter of a mile or something. I guess it must have been about a half a mile.
Yeah.
Our pen's at one end, the funnel coming down into it. Well, you could get them up into that crevice and then you could get behind me. Of course, they went that way. And get behind me, start them down. Well, they come down pretty good. About the time they hit that funnel, I started funneling into those pens, and there wasn't nothing to do but run in there and push them.
Yeah.
And hope you'd get some of them started and the rest of them following.
Yeah.
But it'd take us 3 and 4 times. Sometimes old cows start breaking back and going all over the top of you.
Yeah. Cutting
old wild woods cows, what they were.
Yeah. That wasn't no stopping them.
That old brother of mine, I used to just, I let him lag behind, because he wouldn't run, he was too fat and lazy. But this is what you wanted. He didn't run off all his fat. And his calves wouldn't run off all their fat. They wouldn't run around fighting and hooking each other and bruising the meat and what have you.
Yeah.
That temperament, I want that temperament in my calves. So they'd stand out there and eat instead of running around. They'd eat and get fat and bring a little money.
Well, you know, I worked with cattle rights, Mark, but I don't know a thing about them. I started off with a bull. He was, they called him a kind of a range bull. Mm. He was a long bull and long-legged. And you know, his calves were all interesting. They weren't what you'd call good beef calves. They were growthy in a way, you see. But they're always interesting. Nice, interesting things. Well, then I started getting different kind of bulls, you see, and that gentled up the calves and made them all look alike, and it's not near as interesting as it used to be.
I'll agree with you. That's why I like my Brahma. They're still kind of individual.
Yeah.
I like to see it long ear on.
Yeah.
But it's not business.
Yeah.
There are places that can use Brahma. But not every place is, they're not economically feasible in most places, or in a lot of places.
Yeah.
Now, if you've got a lot of rough pasture and all, and kind of sorry cows anyway, the old Brahma for the first time calf or two, he's good.
Yeah.
He'll hold his own out there in the woods and nothing else. Now, I'll tell you what I like is a good, I would say about a half Hereford, half Brahma cow.
Yeah.
And then go ahead and cross her with either Bayford bull or maybe cross that one with a Hereford bull. And on that heifer then, which would be about 3/4 Hereford, maybe come back with a Brahma bull the next generation.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, those, and you can turn them out here in some of those old woods pastures.
Yeah.
An old cow will get looking best. She'll have, let's say, a quarter to a half Brahma in her. In the wintertime, she might look bad. I mean, just poor she can be, but she'll be carrying one of the prettiest calves around with her.
Yeah.
He'll be up there big and just.
Well, now that's it, you see. That's it. Now, another thing I never got into, and it's actually not a problem, is that artificial. And I've seen it done. And I've seen them calves, and they're about 16 times prettier than any of the calves that you'll have from your bull.
Well, yes, but look at the bull they're using.
Yeah.
They're using a bull that costs $50,000.
That's right.
And you can't afford to buy that kind of bull.
That's right. And but the artificial is insemination is not much trouble. It's not so much trouble. There's a lot more trouble in a way of just maintaining your bulls than it is. You got to have them 12 months a year, and this way you see you're over about one or at the most two.
Well, no, you better keep a couple of bulls with you stuff.
Well,
anyway,
you got to clear it up. Yeah.
Yeah, and
clean it up.
Becker figured. He was figuring it's about the same as what his bulls were taking, about 1.5 breedings to the cow to sell.
Yeah.
You see, what most of them will do, they go in and spot and breed for about 60 days, 45 to 60 days. And then they'll turn the bulls loose with them for another 45 to 60 days. And then they'll pull the bulls out and that's it.
Yeah.
No more breeding.
Yeah.
And about 60 days later, they go in and test the cows. And anything that's not with calf, of course, they just get rid of.
Yeah.
this is business, and I mean, then you're not carrying anything, it's not producing,
yeah,
and what have you, and it's not all that much trouble.
Well, that's it. You've got to have a pretty good little herd to maintain it. Can you get enough help to keep it going?
Well, of course.
You don't need too much
help. There ain't much help needed, really, just at a couple times a year. And most of these people got somebody they send them to school. I keep wanting to go to school myself, but really I don't have any need for it. I mean, I don't do any of it, don't have any of my own to do. They've usually got one man that has been to the schools and can artificial and pregnancy tests.
Yeah, that's right. They do their own.
A lot of them do. Well, now pregnancy tests, not so much. Artificial breeding, a lot of them do their own. But pregnancy test, not so much, because it's something that you really need to keep your hand in that regular thing. So you get somebody like Hazel Lewis down here. I don't know if Hazel's still doing it or whether he's just strictly with Luda now, but he charged 50 cents a head. So.
Yeah.
And, check them all. But now, if a person like me, I'd be doing it all myself.
Yeah.
And, for what I figure, somebody like me, I could run 500 head, and I'd never have to hire any help. I got enough young to get all my work done.
Well, when he charges 50 cents a head, that means he's the only man there, and the others bring them to him.
Right. That's all he does.
That's all he does, is stand there.
I guarantee, last time I worked with Hazel down at Buckley's, he'd get up about 10, 11 o'clock in the morning and come down there. We've been working like crazy since about 6 o'clock. Getting everything in and getting some of the other work done, and he'd drift down there later on. He'd be laid up in the bed while we were working, and he'd come down there and check cows in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Play poker all night with the boss man and a few of his friends. Sleep in late. And boy, he had a racket. He made me $200-$300 in a day then.
Yeah.
Sometimes more.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
He's a specialist. Yeah. He can charge that. Of course, any vets can do it too. I don't know what they. There are people around that do that type of work.
Used to be a good number of them.
I think I still one. I still got this call or not.
Well, Joe Lee used to do about everything in his time, but he don't do it himself much anymore. He just knows how to do it.
Well, now a lot of these people are that way. They don't do it, but they know how. That way they know if the man they hire knows what he's doing.
Now that's what you have to know, isn't
it?
Well, one thing about it, you never have, it looks like to me you moved around and done interesting things.
Well, I don't know. I sometimes wonder.
Yeah.
Seems like I never have got anywhere, do I? I'm still looking for about 5 or 10 acres of land somewhere. I wonder if I ever get the money to buy and can find it. But every year it goes up much higher.
Yeah. Well, I tell you the truth. It's, yes, that's it. Oh, it goes in a hurry. It sure does. Let me tell you, Faye, that's nice. I enjoyed this little break.
Yeah, we needed it. Let me get a check.
Oh, haven't you? You haven't paid?
Well, that's what I came in for. And
right.
Just sitting here.
I got to go look at the horse sometime, Faye, and about four more I need to trim.
Yeah?
I left it picked up one of these things one time about 10 years ago. There was my winnings from one year in there. He had the picture in there.
Oh, really?
run into.
That was over in Canton. I know where the pig's now is somewhere. And I run into it twice that way. Just happened to pick up an old issue, but it'd be a 52.
You ever go down to this leather man right down here?
I have. He's good.
He's good. He made these little belts for me.
Uh-huh.
And they're a whole lot nicer than they buy in the store. He scared me, though. He said he just made up some for...
Hello?
He had just made up some belts for the patrol.
I can get a hold of him in a second here.
For the patrol?
Yeah.
They were expensive.
And I said, okay. I said, well, I don't want any fancy. And when I went back, I was afraid to go back.
Those type belts they get, they're big, wide, heavy things.
Hello?
Very expensive.
Hi, Phoebe.
But when I went back, you see, this is what he had. See those things? And just right. And you know what I found out? You can get a half a dozen at one time. You don't have to change the belt every time you change the britches.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're sweet to call. Yeah.
Well, you say that don't matter, but it...
Yeah.
Well, you just don't wear a belt.
Well, you're real sweet to call. Especially if you let the mouse know she'd be here next week.
Yeah. Tell Phoebe when she's going to be here.
Yeah. Guy standing here and saying, when are you going to come out?
Yeah.
Well, you all going to...
You've got plenty of this old bread. You use this bread.
Well, you know there's places out here.
Bob Haviland, the farrier. And that little telephone call from Phoebe saying that Debbie was on her way. This end of Channel 2 right or over. And the interview was Saturday noon with farrier, blacksmith, Bob Haviland. 20th of October, Saturday, 20th of October, 72, with Rick.